Please silence all electronic devices.
I'm sorry, folks. I don't trust them. And our folks don't trust them.
There is a great deal of overreaction from those who are criticizing this legislation. They will see me in court. You know, if the General Assembly were really trying to do a power grab, there's a lot of things the General Assembly could do, and we weren't.
And they don't have a very good track record there.
Any further discussion or debate?
From downtown Raleigh, this is the WUNC Politics Podcast. Thank you, as always, for clicking play on the program. Today, we're having another one of those discussions about the budget impasse that's taking place here in North Carolina. Your guest is the governor, 75th in North Carolina's history, Democrat Roy Cooper. He comes on the pod a week after Phil Berger, Senate leader, Republican of Rockingham County, had an extended conversation about some of the nuances of Medicaid expansion and also this standstill, standoff for the time being, in state government and the lack of a new state budget. Similar to last week in the conversation with Senator Berger, I began this week's podcast by asking Governor Cooper about what kind of update he has for us.
Well, this is day 15 of our reasonable budget compromise offer that's very detailed that we have provided to both the Speaker and the President pro tem. It uses the Republican budget as its basis and essentially approves 98% of what they want. The changes that we have proposed that stick within their spending limits are: we want to cut taxes for individuals but not corporations. We want to scale back the voucher program. We want to fund school construction and capital construction at our community colleges and universities in a different way. We want a significantly greater increase in teacher salaries and salaries for other state employees at community colleges and universities and non-certified school personnel. And we want Medicaid expansion. And there's also a few other issues regarding more funding for clean water, for early childhood education, and a couple of other things. But essentially, those are the changes that we have proposed to this budget. And we've heard nothing except a lot of round and round and round about, well, are you insisting on Medicaid expansion being in this budget before you will sign it? And I come back to them and say, I insist that Medicaid expansion be part of this budget discussion and the negotiations, but I'm not going to tell you what the final product will be because I don't know. I don't know what the negotiations will be. But I think getting health care to North Carolinians is going to be a critical part of this, and they don't want to negotiate with us if Medicaid expansion is on the table.
To be fair, as I understand it, and correct me if I'm mistaken, you and Republican legislative leaders are not even having a conversation yet. When is the next sit down between you and the Speaker or you and the Senate pro tem? And when do you realistically feel like there's going to be a meaty conversation?
So there have been a lot of conversations, but most of them are conversations where they are asking me in all different kinds of ways, do we have to have Medicaid expansion in order to get a budget? That's their question, because they don't want to negotiate with us until they make sure that I've taken Medicaid expansion off the table. The other problem, Jeff, is that they're spending all of their time trying to override my veto and getting their budget without having to discuss things with me. So, no, there have not been substantive negotiations. We have gone through their budget with a fine-tooth comb, have come back within their same spending limits that have made a reasonable compromise offer, but all they've done is talk about whether Medicaid is going to be included and continue to try to bribe Democratic legislators to override the budget veto.
I think reasonable minds can agree that they're are not yet enough Democrats to override your veto of the spending plan. However, it is a fluid situation. It's August and people are going to go away. I mean, the ebb and the flow of the number of members in the House can change. How much concern do you have that come August 9th or come late August, as it starts to get hotter and this thing just kind of drags on, that this whole issue could be settled with a veto override.
Waiting for somebody to go to the restroom to take a vote is no way to run a government. What I would like for them to do is realize that the people of North Carolina in 2018, even with technologically diabolical gerrymandered districts, they still voted for more balance. They voted for no supermajority for the Republicans in either the House or the Senate. That tells me that the people want them to come to consensus with the governor and with Democrats in the legislature. But they still have it in their minds that they are going to override this veto at some point this summer or in the fall. And all of this smoke and mirror stuff that they say they're talking to us, they're not. We've given them a great basis to come back to us with a compromise or a counteroffer. We've been very specific with the numbers. We told them exactly what we wanted. If they don't want Medicaid expansion, come back with an offer that says we'll do this and this on the other issues, but not Medicaid expansion. If that's their counteroffer, but they won't even enter into negotiations with us because they're too busy trying to override the veto and get their way, like they've done year after year after year. And the people of North Carolina said, that's enough of that. It's time to look at investing more in education and in health care. And let's slow down on these tax breaks for corporations. And you guys talk about it up there. That's what I'm waiting for.
37 states and Washington, D.C. have expanded Medicaid either through legislative action or executive power or voter referenda. Is there a state or are there a couple of states that you would point to and say, that's what North Carolina's Medicaid expansion, if it is to take place, ought to look like?
Well, I think states that have just taken the straight up Medicaid expansion have been the most successful. But even red states like Ohio with Governor John Kasich have had significant success with their Medicaid expansion that said things like, if the federal government stops or curtails its support of this program, then it stops and curtails in Ohio. Ohio's been a great example of improved health outcomes and reduced health care costs for everybody in the state. And I'll tell you, Jeff, this is not a partisan issue. In the last 2 years, when we had President Trump and Republicans controlling Congress and the U.S. Senate, they tried to kill this thing many times. But people need health insurance. And Republican and Democratic governors who are responsible for making things happen in their states, the CEOs of their states, went to Washington and said, Medicaid expansion is working. Don't cut it off. And they didn't do it because we're seeing significant health benefits, economic benefits. We can have a discussion, Senator Berger and I could have a discussion about the merits of government involvement in health care. Certainly, that's on the table. They're going to be having that on the federal level. But this is a decision that's already been made. It's pretty much set in stone as much as it can be because Congress has to affirmatively change it in order for it to be altered in any way. So the question is, why is North Carolina not going to take advantage of it? We fight and claw for transportation, federal transportation money, federal disaster relief money, federal education money. Why not healthcare money? Makes no sense.
Who benefits more from a long-term standoff on this issue?
I don't think anybody benefits from a long-term standoff on this issue. We got a lot of people right now whom I've been talking to on a weekly basis who desperately need health insurance. People who have told to me, I didn't vote for you, I'm a Republican, but this is something that ought to be done. This is not a partisan issue. And the longer we go, the longer people don't have health insurance, the longer our teachers don't get the salary raises that they deserve, and state employees get salary raises that they deserve. And we need to step up and do the right thing in building schools, One of the things that I want to do, instead of this state capital infrastructure fund where they're taking money off of recurring revenues and stuffing it under the mattress for some slush fund for projects that may or may not happen down the road, I want to bond at historic low interest rates, at reasonable costs, where everybody knows what everybody's getting, that provides funding for local schools, for community colleges, universities, and water and sewer infrastructure, which is, I've seen in this disaster recovery from the hurricane, we've seen significant need, particularly in rural counties, for water and sewer infrastructure. And we have an innovative program that we're going to put together. If we can get this bond passed and get the General Assembly to agree to it, that will encourage regionalization of water and sewer infrastructure. All of these things need to be done, and I hope that we can get it done as soon as possible, but we've got to sit down and start negotiating. And as I say, 15 days, offer on the table, no response.
So no conversations, no substantive conversations. I mean, is it fair to call this a failure of government? And you're part of that government, and Phil Berger and Tim Moore. I mean, is this collectively a failure on the ability of those whom North Carolinians have elected to get something done?
It's a byproduct of extreme partisanship that we're seeing on the national level, and unfortunately across the states in our country. And what we need to do is to come and try to iron out our differences. We have made a good faith effort to do that. I've swallowed a lot of things with this offer that I've made in settlement that I really don't think are in the best interest of our state, but I'm going to be reasonable about it. There's going to be honest give and take. But what we have seen, we've had a lot of discussions, but they have been what's the shape of the table type discussions. I mean, it has been, you know, what are we going to discuss when we do discuss things? And I believe a $4 billion boost to a $24 billion budget with Medicaid expansion is an appropriate conversation for us to have in this budget. They don't want to have it yet because they're continuing to spend time hoping that they can override my veto and get their budget exactly the way they want it. And I think people are tired of that. And I hope the individual members of the General Assembly will finally be tired of that. I think there are a lot of Republicans and Democrats who want to try to settle this thing.
We're hanging with Mr. Cooper here on the WNC Politics Podcast. One more on Medicaid before we move to a couple of other topics. Hear from folks on the left and advocates about you know, some of the political benefits or the political tailwinds on this issue. They point to Representative Greg Murphy from the North Carolina House winning a couple of primaries in a special congressional election in a deeply red constituency. I've heard from some of the advocates, they say, hey, did you see that Elon poll that indicated 75% of Democrats support Medicaid expansion? I think 60-ish% of unaffiliated voters, high 40% of Republican voters. Acknowledging all that, and while there might be some political support in this issue, as we think about next year and Lord only knows what is going to transpire on the 2020 campaign trail here, but also nationally, is this an issue that you think is really going to continue to matter to a lot of voters come 2020, or is it going to get buried with everything else that's going to come?
I do believe that the Republican legislative leadership that has been in place for 7 or 8 years is not reflective of who we are or what we believe as North Carolinians. I believe the vast majority of North Carolinians want their hardworking neighbors to have access to health care. 1 in 5 of our early childhood child care workers don't have health insurance. They're working hard for a living. They can't afford it. People want them to have it. I believe that it crosses the political spectrum. I think if this is still an issue in the 2020 elections, I think, yes, it would be a positive for anybody, Republican or Democrat, who wants to bring more health care to people will benefit from this. What I want to do is take that issue off the table for 2020. I think I've had a number of Republicans tell me they don't want it on the table because they know it's not a positive issue for them. I think people need health care now, regardless of the politics. And so I think with so many people across the board supporting this, particularly with rural hospitals and rural health and bringing more providers to rural North Carolina, and this 7 to 11% that we're going to save with private insurance premiums because we're getting rid of a lot of uncompensated care, this benefits a lot of the Republican legislators who represent these rural constituents who are working so hard and just simply can't afford health care. This is something that's already in place. It's not ideology because it's a decision that was already made by the government. And here we are paying our tax money to Washington, and the people of North Carolina are getting no benefit from it. So, yeah, this will be a political issue next year if we haven't gotten it done. I want to take it off the table so it won't be a political issue next year.
And I lied. One more on Medicaid. If it is not taken off the table, would you be in favor of putting it on the ballot as a referenda?
North Carolina has not been a referendum and initiative state. We really don't have a way to make anything like that binding. I think it's pretty clear that the people of North Carolina want it. We have a representative form of democracy. Our legislature needs to vote for this. And I think... given the opportunity that we could get this passed in the General Assembly.
I don't know what will not be on the ballot in 2020. There's a lot of everything. I think they'll probably, the Republican lawmakers may very well put some ballot referenda on there in some form. They put six on the ballot last year. You will be up for re-election next year. I don't expect any Democratic challengers, but perhaps there will be a Democratic challenger. On the Republican side, Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest is running to unseat you. And we learned last week that Holly Grange, a Republican representative from New Hanover County, is also going to get into that race. How did you digest that news?
Well, the question is do the people of North Carolina want a Republican governor who's going to rubber stamp whatever this Republican legislature does? Do they want that? I don't believe that the people do. I believe that people want a leader who values public education, who believes in health care for people, who wants to attract good paying jobs, who wants to fight discrimination, a leader who values our diversity and recognizes diversity as a strength for our state. So I look forward to the election and the discussion. I think that we do need people who will work to try to find consensus. And, you know, our budget debate gets a lot of coverage. But I've been able to agree with the Republican leadership on a number of things, on House Bill 2 repeal, on hurricane disaster relief, on road bonds for transportation. We've been economic development incentives. We've been able to work together on a number of issues, and those tend to get glossed over because there's agreement at the end of the day. But there are ways we can do more to find consensus. I think this balance is helping us, and I think that, for example, to put something on the ballot next year, if it's a constitutional amendment, they'd have to have 3/5, so they'd have to bring in some Democrats to it this time, unlike last time, where even after the people spoke, they went ahead and did these constitutional amendments.
Who would you rather see come early March, Forrest or Grange?
It doesn't matter. Either one of them will be ready. That's for sure.
Three quick ones to get you out of here on. One, governorship or U.S. Senate seat in the nation that you think Democrats are in a good position to flip next year.
Wow. Well, I'll say right here in North Carolina, we can flip this Senate seat here. We've got some good Democratic candidates running. I'll be at the top of the ticket here in North Carolina. So I think that will be a good U.S. Senate seat for us to flip. Haven't given much thought about the governor's race. There aren't that many races up next year.
There are about a dozen. Ones this year,
yeah.
Kentucky and Louisiana.
Right. So Kentucky could be one. Andy Beshear is running for governor. That is one that I say would have a good chance to flip, that's for sure.
One thing that having three daughters has taught you about yourself?
This might sound trite, but I want the very best for my daughters and for them to have all the opportunity that they can possibly have. And, you know, we still don't have equal pay for women in the workforce. I've signed an executive order to push us toward that goal, and it has taught me even more how much we want to strive for that and to level the playing field. I'm very grateful for all three of my daughters for everything that they've taught me, that's for sure.
I'm going to poke a little fun at you here with this last one. First time I ever sat down and interviewed with you, you commented on my socks. You said, nice socks. I think they were like watermelon socks or strawberry socks. And I said, what kind of socks do you have on, Governor? He said, oh, they're just black socks. And I said, well, come on, you could get into this game. And you said, nah, I can't do that. I think it was Politico. Somebody reported right around your birthday, maybe within the last couple of months, that you have potentially started to dabble in the sock game. Who helped you with this transformation?
So it's my millennial staff. I continued to come to work. You know, my sock drawer was complete black socks and quite boring. And I saw these millennials with the shorter pants. We called them sort of high waters when I was in high school. And I had a few of those, by the way. But I really liked the socks, and one of them convinced me, I think one of them gave me a pair, just said, try it on, and I really liked the idea of having something different in my suit instead of just a tie. So today is not a good example. It's a pattern sock, but now my sock drawer looks like a bag of Skittles. It really does, and it's exciting to go in and say what kind of socks that I would wear today. But true to my conservative dressing nature, I still want my socks to kind of match my tie. So, don't know whether that's necessary or whether that's fashionable. I have no clue.
We'll leave it there. I appreciate the conversation.
Thanks, Jeff.
Roy Cooper, Democratic Governor of North Carolina. Good as always to have you along for the podcast. Thanks for subscribing. If you have not yet done so, you can do that at Google Play, iTunes, and or Stitcher. Don't forget, throughout the week, stay up to date with whatever may be happening in North Carolina politics at our website, WUNC.org. For Governor Roy Cooper, I'm Jeff Tiberi. We'll talk to you again soon. Money, get rich and old, bring it back to tobacco.